The next three Mishnayos discuss cases where Yayin Nesech or other forbidden items get mixed up with permitted items or other permitted wine, and whether the permitted part of the mixture can nullify the forbidden part of the mixture. In many cases, we find a concept known as bittul, where there's a mixture of two different substances, a permitted one and a forbidden one, and the permitted substance, if there is enough of it, it can nullify the forbidden part of the mixture as if it doesn't exist, and the entire mixture will be permitted. Whereas if there is not enough permitted substance to nullify the forbidden substance, and we're not sure where exactly in the mixture the forbidden substance is, then the entire mixture will be forbidden, because we're not sure which part of the mixture is the forbidden substance. Be as it may, the Mishnah says, Yayin Nesech Osur, Yayin Nesech, wine which has been used in the service of Avodah Zarah, or which has come into contact with a non-Jew, and so we suspect that it might have been used for the sake of Avodah Zarah, it is forbidden to benefit from. And as well as that, it would forbid a mixture of wine, even if there's any tiny amount of the Yayin Nesech wine. Meaning it doesn't matter how much permitted wine will be in the mixture, the entire mixture will become forbidden, and the Yayin Nesech cannot become nullified. Now, the Gemara explains that this is not always true. It depends how exactly the mixture came about. If the permitted wine was poured into the Yayin Nesech, so then whatever happens, the entire mixture is forbidden, even if there's only a tiny amount of Yayin Nesech and a huge amount of permitted wine, the entire mixture will become forbidden. As well as that, in a regular case where you pour the Yayin Nesech into the permitted wine, it will also all become forbidden, but as long as you're pouring not just a tiny drop at a time, but you're pouring it from a container which doesn't have like a sort of tip or a spout, which makes it, when you pour, that only a very thin line of that liquid comes out of the container. But rather, when you pour it from this container, it's more than just a sort of line, a thin flow of that liquid going out, but it's a much wider and thicker flow of the liquid. In that case, it would all be forbidden. However, if it is indeed a case where it's a very thin flow, then the halacha is, we say, kama bottle. Each drop that ends up going into the permitted wine is nullified as it reaches there. The moment that it reaches and gets mixed with the permitted wine, it itself becomes nullified. So that would be in that specific case. But in a regular case, the law of the Mishnah would be correct, that if there's even only a tiny, tiny amount of Yayin Nesech, it would make the entire mixture of wine forbidden. Now, the Mishnah adds that this is only true if it's Yayin b'Yayin or Mayim b'Mayim. If there's a mixture of wine with wine, Yayin Nesech wine with permitted wine, or if it's a mixture of forbidden water with permitted water. If, let's say, there was water which was used in the service of Avodah Zarah, it would also become forbidden and have the same laws of Yayin Nesech. However, says the Mishnah, if it's Yayin b'mayim, if Yayin Nesech gets mixed with permitted water, or Umayim b'yayin, forbidden water which has been used for Avodah Zarah, gets mixed with permitted wine, then the laws of mixtures and nullification are always very different, if it's a different substance. And there the law is, b'nosim ta'am, the mixture will be forbidden if the taste of the forbidden substance can be detected. Zaklol, this is the rule, bim b'minai. If the mixture is made up of the same substances, then b'masho, the entire mixture will become forbidden even if there's only a tiny amount of the forbidden substance. However, v'shaloi b'minai, if the mixture is made up of two different substances, like wine and water, then b'nosim ta'am would only be forbidden if the taste of the forbidden substance can be detected in the mixture. The Gemara explains that the fact that the Mishnah repeated itself in the form of a rule is coming to include other cases like Tevel, which has to do with things which are not tithed, so they're forbidden because of that, so the same general law would apply. Mishnah Tes, Elu Asurim V'Yisim B'Chol Shehein, the following things are forbidden to benefit from, and also share the law of Yayin Nesech, that if they are mixed with something permitted, and we're not sure which part of the mixture is the forbidden part, then the entire mixture would become forbidden, regardless of how much more permitted substance there is more than forbidden substance. And the main reason for all of these cases is because they are included in the category of a dovar sheba minyan, which literally means something which is counted by number, and it refers to something which is significant in and of itself. Every single unit is already something significant, such that even if it gets mixed up with lots of other things, it's not relevant to start talking about nullifying it, because each individual unit has its own significance. So first, the Yain Nesech, as we saw in the previous Mishnah. Secondly, Avodah Zarah, any idols, Eres Levuvin, skins of animals where there is a hole in the skin where the heart was. That was this part of one of the services of different idol worshippers who would cut a hole in the skin of an animal and take out its heart while the animal was still alive and offer it up as a sacrifice to their idol. The Shurah Niskol, an ox which had killed a person, and the law is that such an ox or any animal which kills a person needs to be stoned, and it's forbidden to benefit from that animal, while both before it had been stoned and once it's been stoned and killed. The Egla Rufa, this refers to a case where a dead body is found to have been killed outside a city, and we're not sure who exactly killed that person. And the law is that the nearest city needs to go out, and they go through a whole process there, and included in that whole procession is that they bring a calf, and they break the neck of the calf. So the Egla Rufa, that calf whose neck is broken, it's also forbidden to benefit from it. And if it is mixed with lots of other calves, let's say, then all of them will be forbidden because each calf in itself has significance that it cannot be nullified in a mixture, even if there are thousands and thousands more permitted animals. Mitzpah Yotzeirah and the birds which are used in the purification process of Yotzeirah, somebody who had tzara'as, certain spots on their skin, which made them tomei, usar nozir, the hair of a nozir. A nozir is somebody who accepts certain prohibitions upon himself, such as not consuming anything which comes out of grapes, like wine, not becoming tomei from a dead body, and not to cut his hair. And at the end of his nazirah's period, when he stops being a nozir, he needs to shave off all of his hair as part of the process of the end of his nazirah, and it is forbidden to benefit from that hair. Ufeta Hamar, a firstborn donkey, that the law is that it needs to be redeemed with a sheep, and that sheep needs to be given to a Kohen. And if he does not redeem the donkey with a sheep, then that donkey the neck of that donkey needs to be broken, and it is forbidden to benefit from it until it has been redeemed. Uvosar Becholav, and a mixture of meat and milk. Now, in this case, the meat is only going to have significance if it was indeed a significant piece of meat. If we're talking about a tiny, tiny amount of meat, then it would be relevant. But if it is a significant piece of meat, then even if it's mixed with thousands more permitted pieces of meat, it would not be nullified, and the entire mixture of meat and milk would be forbidden. The Sarah Mishtaleach, the goat which is sent off the cliff, it's thrown off the cliff on Yom Kippur, and all of the limbs of that goat get broken as it falls down the cliff, even if it gets mixed up with other parts of different animals, they would all be forbidden. V'chulin sh'nishchatu ba'azara, an animal which has not been designated as a korban, and which was slaughtered inside the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, that is forbidden, and it's forbidden to benefit from such an animal which has been slaughtered there, if it is not for the sake of a korban. So all of these examples, Harayel Asurin, all of these things will be forbidden to benefit from. The Oysim Chol Shehein, and would forbid even a mixture of this with many other permitted items, and they cannot be nullified. Mr. Yud, Yain Nesech, we now return to the subject of the last parak and a half, Yain Nesech, Shenofel Abur, which fell into a pit of kosher wine belonging to a Jew. Kulo Osra Bahana'a, the entire pit of loads and loads of wine there becomes forbidden to benefit from, as we have seen over the last two Mishnayos. However, M'shimming Amliel, Omer M'shimming Amliel says, I have a solution. Yemocher Kulo Lenochri, the entire pit of wine can be sold to a non-Jew. Chutz mit Yain Nesech Shabai, except for the value of the Yain Nesech which is inside of the mixture. If, let's say, 10% of the wine which is in there is Yain Nesech, so you should sell the wine to the non-Jew for 90% of the price, and don't accept money for the relative to the amount of Yain Nesech which is within the mixture of wine. According to others, you can accept all of the money from the non-Jew and then just take 10% of that money which you received and destroy it. The point is, you're still able to benefit from the relative amount of the mixture, which is not Yain Nesech itself. Mishud Aleph, a wine press was often coated, the walls of the wine press would be coated with some sort of tar or pitch in order to make sure that they would get rid of any cracks in the walls of the wine press through which the wine and the juice which is coming out of the grapes would seep through. Now, obviously, pitch has quite a strong and foul smell, and in order to get rid of this, they would often add wine that would sort of coat the pitch itself with a layer of wine in order to get rid of that foul smell. And this means that we're going to run into a problem of Yain Nesech. So the Mishnah Gashel Evan Shizipsogoi, a wine press made out of stone, where the walls of the wine press are stone, Shizipsogoi, and a non-Jew coated the walls of the wine press with pitch. How can you make sure that you get rid of all of that wine which was absorbed by the pitch so that you'll be able to use that wine press? Says the Mishnah, Menagva, you should dry it. V'hi Torah, and that way it will become pure, it will become fully kosher for you to be able to use it. And when we say dry it, the Gemara explains that that consists of applying boiling hot water with ashes on the walls of the winepress. Bishul 8, so if the winepress is made out of wood, then Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, Yinagev, it's enough to dry it in the same way. However, the Chachomim say, since wood absorbs more than stone does, here it's not enough to just do that, rather first, Yiklef Sazefes, you need to peel off all of the pitch, and then you need to go through this whole process to make sure that the actual walls of the winepress have not absorbed some of that wine which was applied to the pitch. And third, Yivishal Cheres, if the winepress was made out of earthenware, then at least according to the Chachomim, Afal Pisha Kolavis Azefes, even if he does peel off the pitch, Hazer Asura would still be forbidden to benefit and to use that winepress, even if you go through this process of peeling it off and then applying hot water with ashes on the walls. However, the Gemara explains there is another solution, and that is to spend 3 days filling up the entire winepress with water and replacing that water every 24 hours. That would be a way to permit it, but we see that there are 3 different levels over here, depending on how absorbent the material is from which the wine press is made.